Welcome to Streaming Thoughts, where we stream our thoughts on movies, TV, and all things nerdy. I am Daniel.
And I am Nathan.
And welcome to our podcast. So Nathan, what is in the news docket today?
Oh, news docket. A Russian court has banned anime from being shown in Russia.
What?
Specifically Death Note, Tokyo Ghoul, and Inuyashiki.
I have heard of Death Note, and the other ones I'm not too familiar with.
I'm a big fan of Death Note. I really want to see Tokyo Ghoul. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. But a St. Petersburg court has banned these animes because they think it will cause teenagers to mimic on-screen violence.
Oh, yeah, because you know how it is. You watch a couple anime shows, and then before you know it, you
find a magic notebook that falls from the sky that lets you kill people just by writing the name.
I mean, that's how the Inquisition was started.
Right? I mean, geez, clearly these are, like, totally real things that people are going to imitate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Inquisition, all of these bad things that have happened around the world is because of bad entertainment that were shown to people, and that's how all of this stuff got started. Don't you know about that?
Yeah, violent anime, violent games. It's always so silly. Like, why do people keep going on this idea that it somehow causes people to, I don't know, be more violent just because?
Yeah, it's like the same argument with violent video games and all that, right? Like, study after study, it just continues to show that there is no correlation between violent media and violence, right? There just isn't. In fact, there's some studies that have shown the opposite of this being more of an outlet.
Yeah.
There isn't, like, conclusive studies.
There's no conclusive studies on it being a positive thing, but there are fairly conclusive studies that says there's no impact for the people who do act out violent tendencies.
Exactly. So whenever there's that kind of stuff done as far as censoring of media, it's always, to me, just silly and dumb.
Yeah,
and
it
why?
Is. I agree. It's something to make fun of, honestly. It's crazy. But staying on the topic of anime, Japan is actually looking to change their anime copyright laws.
I'm not very familiar with Japanese anime copyright laws.
Well, specifically, they want to make it so that if you want to cosplay as an anime character, you have to purchase a license first from the anime or manga creators.
What kind of Nintendo rules do these anime production companies are playing by? Because I love Nintendo as much as the next person, right? I really do. It's what I grew up with as a kid. But this is the kind of stuff that Nintendo would pull. You know?
Well, I don't really put it past them. And I suppose it would apply to anybody who would want to cosplay as Mario or Bowsette or any other derivative of a Nintendo property. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you really have to think about it. Cosplay can be a big business.
Yeah, it can be a big business. But at the same time, I think that most of the people who are cosplayers, from my understanding, and I'm not too into the cosplayer world, but my understanding is a lot of these people are, this is what they do themselves.
It's not about buying the official marketed costumes or anything like that. I mean, it's a big thing. Cosplayers make their own thing. For example, my wife has a Sailor Jupiter that at one point she was hired to show up at a birthday party dressed as Sailor Jupiter
because they
wanted to do it. And some cosplayers can make upwards of like $90,000 a month doing these performances, posing for pictures, Patreon events, all of these things. They can add up, and the really big cosplayers can make a fairly sizable living off of this.
Yeah.
That's really who they're targeting, saying, you are making money off of my creation. You should have to purchase a license before you do that.
Well, I guess from a legal standpoint, it does kind of make sense to go with that route, because when you think about it, I mean, technically, you are a business, right? If you are a business profiting off of a property that does not belong to you, from a legal standpoint, you can make that argument.
Yeah, I mean, Walmart can't just go out and suddenly start making Pokemon plushies and selling them without purchasing a license to produce and sell those toys. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. And that's what they're saying is currently the law is kind of blind to this. Mm-hmm. That's what they're looking at changing is we want to close that loophole. We want to close that gap.
Yeah, I guess from that end, it does kind of make sense. I do hope that they reach a very good amicable solution between the cosplayers and the production companies that own these characters, mostly because they could either continue to maintain a good healthy cosplay environment, or they could for all intents and purposes kill the entire cosplay arena, at least in Japan, right? I mean, you have the power depending on how restrictive they are and all of that stuff.
And then that's another question of, I don't know international copyright laws. I don't know how much the Japan can influence what happens in America. Mm-hmm. I do know that when it comes to trademarks and copyrights, most often it comes down to how good your lawyer is, honestly.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a big question. You know, so it's a developing thing and naturally has the cosplay industry a bit in a kerfuffle over it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. Especially if I was a big cosplayer that's making a lot of bank. Yeah, you're cutting into my action here, so I'd be worried, yeah.
Other news, The Mandalorian is moving forward and is going to start recording in Los Angeles for season 3 on April 5th.
April 5th, all right. That's not too far from now.
No, and so we can probably expect another Mandalorian season 3 December, just like the last few seasons. So let's see where we end up at, right?
Yes, I am so excited for season 3. This is one of those seasons that with Grogu possibly no longer being in the picture, things are going to look very interesting. Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited to see what they're going to bring up. I have no doubts that this is going to be good. Again, it's Jon Favreau, and so far he hasn't really let us down. And so I am cautiously optimistic for season 3.
If you want to be cautiously optimistic about things, something you can be cautiously optimistic about, HBO Max is looking to making a live action Harry Potter TV series.
Really? I had not heard about that.
It's in the very early works. They're basically doing the discussion phase of it, bouncing around the general concept of running a live action. I mean, they have the product, they have the property, live action series. Let's do it for Harry Potter.
I'm curious to see what they're going to focus on. If it's going to be following the character of Harry Potter or just focusing on a different, entirely different cast and
the
world.
Rumor is that they are looking to adapt the Marauders, aka Harry Potter's father, Peter Pettigrew, Professor Lupin, and Sirius Black, back when they first were going to Hogwarts as students. Okay. And when they created the Marauders map and all the shenanigans they got into back then.
Interesting. Huh. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with that. Obviously, that makes it easier for them to cast different actors, right?
And I'd be fine with that. I would also be fine if they just said, here's, say, Harry Potter's kids going through Hogwarts as well. You know, bring it forward, bring it back, whatever. There's plenty of room there. The biggest thing I would really want to see in this is people always promise that there's a solution for Quidditch that doesn't make it a ridiculous game. And the one time they had a chance to do it in the books and the movies was the Quidditch World Cup, and they dropped the ball and they just made it still as ridiculous as any other explanation of the sport. Give me at least one season where they actually show that it makes sense and catching the Quidditch doesn't automatically win the game and make the rest of it all completely meaningless and pointless.
You mean the snitch?
The snitch, yeah. I want to see just one time them actually showing on screen or in any media a game of Quidditch where catching the snitch doesn't make every other aspect of the game pointless.
Yeah.
That's all I want from a live action show or any other Harry Potter creation.
The Harry Potter world has a lot of really strong elements to it. I just feel like sometimes the writing and the execution of said things sometimes ends up falling a little flat. I'm curious to see if they do something different now that it's on a TV series format and not a movie. If the writing can be more strong because they have a little bit more time.
One season per school year sort of situation, yeah.
Yeah.
That could certainly be a lot more effective. But speaking about products that kind of fall flat and HBO Max, you know, someone was bound to eventually take the COVID pandemic and turn it into a movie.
And make a movie about it? Yeah, yep, yep, exactly. And that is a topic of today's conversation. It is a new release, a 2021 release. This was released on January 14th, and it is Locked Down, a basically romantic comedy heist film.
Yeah.
Kind of, right? And kinda. This all takes place during the, you know, COVID pandemic.
You know, it's kind of interesting. This is, I think, our third property that we are covering in this podcast that was all released on that January 14th, 15th time frame.
Was it really? Is this really one of those? What else did we talk about that was released soon? Oh, yeah, I guess Outside the Wire.
Outside the Wire was? WandaVision started on January 15th.
Oh, yeah. WandaVision. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, you're right. This is their first pandemic film. I think this is not the first pandemic film. I think there were other films that were also kind of centered around COVID that were released sometime last year. I just haven't really paid much attention to it because I was more of the person that like, I don't want to see a movie about the pandemic. I'm living in it. You know, like I want to watch something that takes me out of the pandemic.
So overall, I kind of felt like it was ultimately inevitable that somebody was going to make a COVID-19 background story for a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this one is a little bit of an interesting take because it starts off as almost like they're doing a two couples who have fallen out of love, rediscover love sort of start. Yeah. And then suddenly jumps to a heist movie in the late second act.
Yes. It is a bit of an interesting film, right? Like just the way that it's structured. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to see this film, because it was sort of, it has all of these elements of like a romantic comedy, these two people falling out of love and trying to find love again, but also mixed in with a global pandemic and what if we steal a diamond situation kind of rope in into the mix of it all, right? And I think that to me, all those three elements worked really well together. I didn't feel like there was a whole lot of disjointness, for lack of a better term, happening here. I think that the writers, who's Stephen Knight, did a pretty good job at combining all of these three elements in a way that worked really, really well. I think for me, at least, they worked well.
I'm going to disagree a little bit on that because this is a two-hour movie that's probably about 45 minutes too long. The most difficult part of that is the first 30 minutes of this film. The first 30 minutes of this film is a slog to get through because they spend all this time setting up the difficulty that people are going through, being locked down, having to deal with this pandemic and being out of work or furloughed and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
See, if the COVID-19 never happened, maybe this might have been necessary to set up. Mm-hmm. But we've all lived through this. They didn't need to spend 30 minutes establishing what it's like to live in a lockdown quarantine. Don't go out, avoid social spaces, avoid going shopping, avoid going to an office or a department store. None of that was needed.
The way I see this, right, is that, yes, I agree with you on that end as far as it being like we don't need to see this because we're literally living it, right? But I feel like 5 years from now, this would be a good thing to have. This exposition, right? Because if anybody wants to see this movie 5 years from now, it's something that you want to build it so that we're capturing this moment in time now so that future people who want to see this can appreciate or can see what it was like in 2020.
I think it's going to take a little bit more than 5 years for people who'd be interested in seeing a movie of this nature and have no recollection of what it's like to live through it.
Yeah, I was being a bit optimistic there with that. But I feel like that was necessary to just give the weight, I feel, of on top of these two people completely out of love now, just basically on the verge of absolute hating each other, that they cannot escape this lockdown prison. Because from the looks of it, this was happening right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Right? There was even a scene where they were like, do you have a mask? And they don't have a mask, which to me, that basically told me that this was like early on in the pandemic
situation, right? You know, you're looking through what do I have that can be quickly used as a mask? I mean, heck, even I, going back to like the very early on part of the pandemic, before we had crafted masks, could buy masks at every, you know, corner store or whatever, I went back to a old instruction set that told you how to turn a t-shirt into a ninja mask.
Yeah, I remember seeing those videos too.
I needed a mask. What else am I going to do?
You know what's interesting about this, right? Okay, so we have talked about movies that were shot in a very small period of time. And that movie that comes to mind is obviously the Fantastic Four movie from 1995 or 1994.
Yep. 1994.
That movie was a movie that was shot in like what, like 12 days or 15 days or something ridiculous like that, right? Like they had basically like 2.5 weeks or something crazy. This movie was shot in 18 days.
Okay. I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, part of it is like, honestly, some of the camera work felt like they had somebody just recording it with their phone.
Yeah, like a screen capture software. That's what they use, basically. And
even the parts when he's out on the street talking to his poetry, it wasn't quite shaky cam, but it was that kind of, you know, like, have you ever recorded an extended thing with your phone in landscape mm-hmm. mode and then go back yeah. to rewatch it, how it just, you think you're holding it still, but you're really not?
Mm-hmm.
That's really how it felt, that maybe they just got a bunch of people together and just recorded this with their phones and made it into a movie.
And you know, that's interesting that you brought that up, because again, and this is another reason why I wanted to talk about this movie, is not just because of how it was structured, right, but also because of how it was shot, because this movie was announced on September of 2020. So this movie is not something that has been in the works for months or years. This was announced late last year, and they were like, yeah, we're working on this movie, we're gonna shoot this movie in like super quick, edit it super quick, and then release it in January, because of the nature of it looking like it was kind of rushed. There's more like just point and shoot, right?
Yep. Yeah, very much so.
Because of the pandemic, there weren't any extras. So all of the people that you saw, those are actually real civilians. They're real people.
Mm-hmm.
On the street, on the supermarket, and even Harrods employees, those are actually Harrods employees. they're not extras. And so I think that was a really interesting way to shoot this movie and to use real people and to not cast any extras. And I think that that's what gave an element of realism to this film. For example, when he was standing in line at the market and he asked, yeah, how many asses do you have? You know, and that guy, that was not an extra. That was a real, that was a real person. So I thought that was just amazing.
Oh, man.
That element of realism, I think, is what gives that extra layer to this film. On top of all of these other actors that are there, right? Obviously, Anne Hathaway and Chiwetel Ejiofor are just solid actors, right? Who, you know, they can bring their A game.
I mean, there are some aspects of it because it was all filmed in London, and there's some British slang that I'm like texting my friend from London saying like, geez, what does this slang mean? Is this actually something people say? Like, if you want to compliment somebody on how funny you think they are, do you really say you're so dry?
Yeah, right? That's such an interesting thing, because I also thought about that.
They hold in high regard the idea of having this dry sense of wit and humor.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the British have this kind of national ideal of having a very elevated, dry, and subtle sense of wit and humor. But mm-hmm. at the same time, it's like, if I, as an American, was telling someone that they were very dry in relationship to their personality, it would have the opposite meaning, that you don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not funny. Not only are you not funny, but you don't even try to be funny. You're just so dry and boring. But then other people kept referring to Paxton as like, oh, you're so dry. Like, it's this huge compliment. I'm like,
compliment. Yeah, exactly. No, it's really funny. And to be honest, like, I tend to watch quite a bit of British TV. But this was one of the few sayings that I hadn't heard before. So I thought it was interesting.
So there is some lingo. It comes across a little bit off at first to me as an American, but talking to, you know, people who are actually from London, it is a legitimate use of their lingo, their slang, their way of dressing things. So
yeah,
there is that, again, there's that certain level of authenticity, because mm-hmm. they did just film this quickly in London on location with actual people. So I wonder how much of it might have been improv, or how much of it was pre-written? I don't know.
That is a really good question, right? I mean, with 18 days of filming, it is very interesting to see how much of the script was actually finalized by the time filming started, or how much of it was written or rewritten as they were filming. I mean, that's not to say that that doesn't happen, because that happens sometimes. I mean, even with really high budget films or sometimes moderately budget films, right? For example, I mean, a film that comes to mind that didn't have a complete script is Iron Man. Iron Man didn't have a complete script by the time they were filming it. Sometimes they were like writing as they were filming.
And some sometimes of the stuff it works and improv. Sometimes it doesn't. And And you do see a little bit of that dry humor that you can see in certain elements of British productions. Like when she's having a business meeting and the one guy's trying to like tell his kids, like, stay out of my Zoom call. I'm having a meeting, right? I'm working. Stay out of my call. And then all of a sudden, once they realize like where she was going with the meeting, he's like, yeah, let me make sure my kid is on my lap. Happened in frame, so you can't lay me off. I mean, I have a kid. Are you going to look at this kid and tell him his daddy's out of work?
That was such an interesting scene. And I think that scene for me was probably the most unsettling one because it felt the most real, you know, especially when the kid was just at the end, the kid was like, hello, you know, like just saying hi to this person who just fired their dad. And then
she's just left on the Zoom call with this kid that's off camera going, hi, like, hi. Yeah.
That was so awkward. And
it was
just
awkward
weird.
And realistic.
Yeah.
Funny in its execution and how it all worked out. So I really actually enjoyed that scene.
Yeah, that scene was actually really, I mean, it was unsettling and awkward, but at the end it was really well executed. And I do agree with you. That was definitely really good. Now, let's jump into the heist aspect of this film. Because
they are totally going to jail.
Right?
I mean,
but they try to make it an airtight situation, but what are your issues with the heist bit?
When it first came up, she hears that the gem is not going to be verified once it reaches New York. It's just going to be put into a vault. And
yeah, who knows when they're going to check it.
Right. Because again, as she said, once you have something this expensive, it becomes more so with being able to say you own it rather than actually owning it.
Yeah.
As she said, there's a copy of the diamond for insurance purposes that's put on display, and there's the real one that's kept in the vault.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She needs to send the real one out by courier, and she needs to pocket the fake one to be destroyed later.
Exactly.
Just switching those two things, knowing where the cameras are. If that was the end of it, and they just did that in 2 seconds, it maybe could have worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, spending, like, most of the evening not even doing the job of packing up what needs to be shipped out, but going through the deli section to pick out a picnic and having the picnic on the roof, which they're going to have security cameras up there to determine if someone tries to break in from the roof. So there's footage of them sitting up there having a picnic, kissing each other on the edge. That's not going to be at all suspicious about this person that they all know has a fake ID.
I mean, can we really believe, or do you think that someone with an ID of Edgar Allan Poe is ever gonna be found out? Come on.
I thought it was a little bit unbelievable that no one knew who Edgar Allan Poe was. I mean, he's one of my favorite poets.
Although I do wonder if that's a British thing, you know, because I mean, Edgar Allan Poe is an American poet, right? So I do wonder if it's not.
Maybe he's not as popular in Britain.
Yeah, I don't know, right? Yeah.
But they know he had a fake ID. He leaves without doing his full job of packing up that entire display area and shipping it. He leaves his courier van at the location and leaves on the motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to be traced. Plus, there's the dispatcher at the courier company that hates him. He's not going to make a comment about, oh yeah, this guy was totally, you know, a criminal and probably was going to steal something. A big part of the quote foolproof plan was the fact that because of COVID, no one would question the fact that you'd be walking around the whole time with your face covered, so there'd be no footage of your face. Well, gee, they spent half the time with their masks off.
Yeah.
It starts off like it seems like it's a foolproof plan, and then they just blow it almost right from the beginning.
But isn't that the point of it, though? I feel like that was kind of the point of it, is the fact that these are not master thieves. These are just regular people who just thought about staining a $3 million diamond, right? And so for me, it was more of just their poor execution of, yeah, they kind of thought about it a little bit. It's not a Notions, you know, strategy, right? Where they're going to like come up with this whole scheme and plan and all that stuff, which is surprising considering Anne Hathaway was in the Ocean's 8 movie.
But that's just the thing, is they kind of ended like they got away with it and now they're going to just live their life. It's like, no, you didn't get away with it. You're both going to be arrested in very short order. You left a ton of evidence behind. You're shady and guilty as heck. Even assuming the guy that you fired lies for you, right, out of the goodness of his heart, that's not going to slow down the investigation for very long.
Well, and that's the part, right, that I feel like if they had somehow just completed their job, left there in the van and everything that they needed to do, then it was fine. But the fact that they basically, because I mean, what the movie showed, right, is that at the end, they went to Heathrow, mm-hmm, and then they were supposed to drop off the package of the diamond. But that, yep, was not the job. At the end, they made it sound like that was the whole purpose of them, is just to ship this diamond, which technically it was Linda's main responsibility, is to ship the diamond.
Yeah.
That wasn't the only responsibility that she had. The rest of the responsibility was to make sure that everything else in that store was neatly packed and stored and shipped out.
Right.
That rest of it wasn't completed. That rest of it, they just left. You know, with not even in the van that they came with, they just left and got on the motorcycle, drove to Heathrow, shipped the thing, and they were like, done, we did it. Mission accomplished. Now we can retire off of this $3 million pound. And by the way, you're not going to get $3 million out of that diamond. You're probably going to get a million or two, maybe at the most.
No, okay. Remember, $3 million, which is actually about a $4 million diamond.
Yeah.
I actually kind of got curious and looked up to see if I could find pictures of a $4 million diamond, mm-hmm, and was able to find some. And the overall size is actually pretty much on point.
Really?
Yeah. So good prop department.
I mean, no, look, they got that part right. Good attention to detail. I'm just saying that in terms of, you know, if you're going to pawn this off on the black market or something like that, you're not going to sell it for £3 million. Because first of all, the guy who you're selling it to or who's going to broker the deal is going to want a cut out of that.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to end up getting the full £3 million.
That's what they were trying to say, though, right? Because they said, you know, £1 million for me, £1 million for you, and £1 million for the fence.
Right.
Right. So, I mean,
and
they're getting, they stole a £3 million diamond and they're claiming they got £2 million out of it.
Which, again, not how it works. But it kind of just, hey, again, don't look just at me. Shows...
I've never actually tried to fence off stolen goods, so.
Neither have I. Let the record reflect.
Are you revealing a secret criminal mastermind side job of yours?
No, look, I just understand commerce. If you're if I'm trying to sell something off of you that's highly illegal or acquired through illegal means, obviously I want a cut out of that for my services because this is a transaction, right?
Mm-hmm. It's not like you can sit around on this waiting for a despicable former world leader in America from New York City to come along and buy it for his wife.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite figure out who they were, you know, suggesting was the buyer.
I have no idea who they were talking about. All that I knew about that is that that person sounded like a terrible person who didn't deserve to have the diamond anyway. So I was fine with that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I think overall, the heist bit of it, the plot holes of them leaving the job half finished or not even half finished, I think that would have raised a lot of questions. I think the fact that the police were there already because they were already thinking that
they were tipped that,
you know, Paxton was using a fake ID. All of that wouldn't have just ended there.
No.
I think that the better writing would have been if they had just narrowly completed that job. Just like how they kind of show that at the end, right? When they were leaving the building and then they were like looking for Edgar Allan Poe. And then you think that they were looking for him because they were like trying to apprehend him.
The police were on the way.
Yeah, exactly. And they were like rushing out of there because of that. But it turns out that they just wanted to give him his ID back.
Right.
Right. And I think that if they had played it in that sense, right, if they played it in that way, I think that would have added a more humor element to the film. And I think it would have alleviated a lot of the plot holes with them being able to get away with it at the end.
Overall, They're trying to do too much and too little of the screen time that they had available to them. If the entire course of the movie was like very early on introduced the idea of how do we steal this diamond? And they had all of that moral quandary back and forth and her talking to her dead grandma before they ever even got to the heist, that could have actually worked well to fill up a lot of the plot holes. Had they just stuck to the intrapersonal relationships between these two characters and how being forced to be locked down and stuck together actually caused them to work through their issues so they could, you know, mend their relationship and their marriage, that would have been better. But doing all these things and just not dedicating the right amount of pacing and time to it, I think is what really hurt it in the long run.
I think so. I think that the time allocation for the heist bit, I'm with you. In terms of how the movie was structured, there wasn't a whole lot of time left for that, for us to really explore that. I think that they spent a little too much time on the relationship bit, which, I mean, ultimately, this is what this movie's about, right? It's not a heist film that has to deal with a relationship. It's more of a relationship movie with heist included in there somewhere. I think that you're right. I think the heist is the weakest part of the narrative. Everything else was good to me. I didn't really have an issue with it. I thought it was good. I thought that the chemistry between Anne Hathaway and Chiwetel was on point. I didn't really have any issues with that. I think that their relationship was really good.
And I disagree with Anne Hathaway's automatic opinion that just because he wants to make bread is going to be terrible. I mean, come on. I make really good bread. I make delicious bread. That was like, I guess, a big thing back in last April where everybody was like, I'm locked up. I might as well do something. Hey, let's make some bread.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. That I know at least a couple other people that started making bread.
Used to make bread a lot more often, you know, years ago. I don't have the right countertop for it. I mean, if you really want to make good bread, get a granite countertop or get a large granite cutting board type thing. It works so well for making bread.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I actually know some other people that do make bread and it is terrible. And I'm like, how do you mess it up this badly?
It's bread. It's not that complicated. Actually, bread can be very complicated.
Butter, water, yeast, sugar, flour.
Basic building blocks of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the two most surprising cast or the two most surprising actors in this movie were definitely Ben Stiller and Ben Kingsley. The two Bens.
Yes.
It was weird because I didn't really look at the cast for this film. I kind of went in there a little blind. I only knew about Anne Hathaway and Chiwetel Ejiofor. I didn't really know about anybody else.
Have we not seen Ben Stiller recently? Because when he showed up on that Zoom call, I'm like, is that Ben Stiller? That can't be Ben Stiller. It looked like him, but not quite like him. You see someone that reminds you of another actor. I'm like, is that actually Ben Stiller?
It was a little weird, right? I think seeing some of these actors in a different element, I think that's another thing that I thought was interesting is that, you know, we are seeing a lot of these actors through Zoom calls. And so I think that sort of gives them a different light. It's not the glamorous, you know, usual representation of some of these actors and movie stars, right, that we typically get to see them on. This is a very different look and feel to a lot of these. I mean, Ben Kingsley, which was such a different character from what I normally see him playing, right? It's just, at the same time, you're right. It was a little difficult to distinguish both of these actors.
Yeah. See, Ben Kingsley, I picked up pretty quickly and I thought he knocked it out of the park for his role. The comedy of like, who's Edgar Allan Poe? I was like, how'd she come up with it? Like, well, Edgar's the name of my grandfather. Well, how'd she come up with Allan Poe? Oh, I asked this guy. That guy hates me. No one's going to believe this.
It's like, and I love that. That comedic bit was so great because it's like, I'm going to ask everybody here, has anybody ever heard of Edgar Allan Poe? And then someone's like, no, I haven't. It's like, you're with Mike. Mike is the one who came up with this. Of course, he's going to say no.
Well, I never read about him before. That's because he's not in the Bible. or whatever that yeah. line was.
The only book you read is the Bible. The comedic elements in this film were done really well, I felt. I think that they were paced just right. I felt like we could have used a little bit more in the heist bit. We didn't really get very many, I think, in the heist bit, and I think we could have used more of those.
I think it could have been spread out and maybe interspersed a bit more and kind of set it all up, but...
Yeah, I think with that, we should jump into our TLDL, right?
Too long, didn't listen.
All right, and this is a section where we give you our closing thoughts on the movie or TV series that we're talking about. So Nathan, Locked Down from HBO Max TLDL.
You know, this movie takes a little while to get into it. I kind of complained about it at the beginning, and I'll say it again. The first half hour, don't judge the movie yet. Sit it, give it the time. It does get better. There are definitely some comedic elements of it. There are great performances by great actors that you know and love. You just have mm-hmm. to get there. Does it make it a great movie that I highly recommend? Probably not. But it is an enjoyable movie that if you have the time, you're just sitting down to, you know, watch a standard, you know, flick. Yeah, this would work.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree with you on that. I think that the movie had a very rather slow start to it. Absolutely. I think it was a little dull at the beginning. I think just because they were trying to get us to care about these characters and their struggle when we had just saw them come on screen. And so I think that that's probably why we struggled a bit with the first half an hour of the film. But you're right. I think that this is a good film to watch that takes place during the pandemic, but that's not about the pandemic, right? Where the pandemic is sort of more as a background thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is still a movie where you can escape to, even though it still takes place in the pandemic. I think the elements of the romantic comedy bits and in the heist bit and the pandemic came together. I think that they came together really well. It did struggle at times with the heist bit of it, but I think that overall, the three elements worked really well. Obviously, the actors were, all the performances were on point. I really didn't really have any issues with them because, I mean, these are all really, really good actors. So obviously, we're going to get really good performances out of them. So ultimately, I think this is a movie worth watching. If you have HBO Max, definitely check it out. I think it's a fun film.
And with that, Dan, final thought. I think we both had this discussion early on when we started this podcast that sooner or later, somebody was going to make a movie that took place in a pandemic. Did you have any actual thought that would turn out to be a heist film?
I honestly did not. And I can't wait for other ideas that other people are going to have about films that take place during the pandemic, because you can't make it about the pandemic, right? And I'm excited to see what that looks like. And hey, if you have any ideas, by the way, if people out there have any ideas of what you want to see out of a pandemic, like this is a pandemic heist film, what else do you want to see that takes place in the pandemic? And you can definitely let us know by hitting us up on Facebook at
Streaming Thoughts and on Twitter at
Streaming Geek.
This has been Nathan.
And this has been Daniel.
Thanks for listening.